Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And welcome back to the House of Pod. My name is Kaveh.
That's not how you actually start your podcast, is it?
The House of Pod, yeah. My name is Kaveh. I think that's how you pronounce it. I am the host of this little fun-ish medical podcast today.
It's not little.
It's average size. It's a good size, average size.
It'll work.
It'll do the trick. That voice you're hearing is the gentleman who will be helping me co-host this episode. You haven't met him yet. I'm very excited for you guys to meet him. And it's a subject that's near and dear to my heart. And joining us today, we're going to have two guests. But before that, I have a special guest, a special little buddy who's going to join us today. Yep. Shaheen Davari. Shaheen, welcome to the show.
Hey everybody. It's so nice to be here. I'm thrilled. I've been your little buddy now for more than a decade. Well, almost two decades.
Well, can you explain to people how we know each other? Because actually they have met your people on the show have heard your brother before. If they've been listening long enough, they've heard your brother once or twice. So
yeah.
But tell us how we know each other. Go on. Well,
I just realized it's now actually more than two decades. I met you when I was a sophomore in high school in 2002 or 2003, something like that, mm-hmm. when you were in med school with my brother. And yeah. I came out to, I think, see the Renaissance Men play a concert, maybe?
The band was called The Resurrection Men.
That's what I said.
That was my band. That's the music you heard in the intro and the music you hear on the show. Not the Renaissance Men. We weren't like at a fair. We weren't
playing lutes. It was Resurrection. I said Resurrection.
Okay, we'll go back. We'll listen to that again.
In fairness, the word erection is in there, and so I should have thought.
It should have been automatic for you.
Automatic.
You know, the funny thing is, you're right. I met you. You were a very young man, and you're now like in your 50s. But in my mind, you're still like 16.
Yeah.
I just can't believe it.
That's what happens. People pause in your brain with the moment you meet them, especially when you're already an adult. You were already, you know, in your 30s, I guess. How old were you when you were in med school?
No, I wasn't like that old. I look like I'm in my 30s. I look like I was in my 30s when I was in like 15. Like I just have had that. I have city miles
exactly
on me.
The same as when you were in med school. You don't look a day over whatever.
I kind of stopped like you at that age. And then I just kind of like, I'm there. I'm stuck there, which is, I hope, lasts for long enough. Tell people, so anyways, your brother, Bobby Davari, he is a doctor. I went to medical school with him. He's been on the show a couple times, good friend of mine. And because of him, I was able to meet you, and I've always looked at you as like a little cousin, if at least. I wouldn't say little brother. I'm being realistic, I don't see you enough to say little brother. I feel that way, but if I'm being like, it's more like, it is family. It's a family thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, the personal connection doesn't hurt.
very much connected.
You actually are responsible for me not shaving my chest hair anymore.
Oh, wow. I feel like I did something important there. When did that happen?
I mean, I don't know. The last time it was maybe 6-7 years ago. And you were like, dude, what is this shit? You're Persian. Just be Persian. And I thought, oh, you're right. You're right, man. You're right.
And it looks good on you. I'm not going to. So people, hopefully we'll have a picture to go on the when I post this video.
My chest hair.
If we could, yes. You have such a beautiful beard. You have like the most classic old school, like Cyrus the Great beard, like just noble and regal in appearance.
I appreciate that. Also, inspired by your Twitter post where you took a picture and posted of a
Yassified Cyrus the Great. Yes.
Yeah. And I thought, okay, I want to look like that for sure. Let's do that. And I was going to do a Halloween costume out of it, but.
Yeah, well, you could still do that, maybe. For listeners also, you may have seen Shaheen at some point in the past. He had a little video that went viral about, 5-6 years ago, was it?
Yeah, it makes the rounds every year now because it's a Halloween video where I'm just hucking candy at children standing outside my door.
It is hilarious. I love the video.
I know.
So kids come up to the door, and Shaheen's just like chucking candy at them, sometimes over his shoulder, sometimes behind his back. And it's just most people love it. 99% of people love it. And then there's always like some people who are posting like, I can't believe he's doing that. If he did that to my kids, I'd beat his ass. But the kids all love it. Everyone's enjoying it. Everyone's having a blast.
The parents did too. The parents all had a really good time. We had people come and knock on the door afterwards, and kids came back multiple times. It is weird though. The reason it happened is because I wasn't getting any trick-or-treaters. I spent like $80, $90 the first time I had the opportunity to have trick-or-treaters in my life. And I went and bought all this candy and it's like 7:30 at night. And I'd gotten one kid and I'm like, I got to get rid of all this candy. Otherwise I'm going to end up eating it. Yeah. And so decided, all right, you're getting fistfuls of candy now.
Desperation.
Yeah, it's great.
It was brilliant to film it. Yeah, so look for that. You'll see Shaheen and see what he looks like if you're interested. So anyways, the reason I'm having you on the show today, other than the fact that I love you and I just like seeing you and it's an excuse for us to hang out, is that I want to get non-doctors on the show to help me with some opinions and to get some takes. And you are as smart a guy as I know, and I want to hear what an educated non-doctor thinks about certain things. Oh, before we go any further, if you haven't, please check out our iTunes and rate and review us if you haven't already. I'll appreciate that.
Don't rate and review if you're not like into it, though. Just maybe keep that opinion to yourself.
Yeah, but I'm okay with it. Yeah. I mean, I would rather they say something good. Yeah, that would be nice. But if they have constructive criticism, I'm willing to hear it. I am willing to hear it. People email me constructive criticism all the time, but it's just like certain things I can't do much about. Like you should be a woman. And I'm like,
I appreciate that. Yes, I've thought about it. Anytime.
Or they should be like, you should die.
Oh, yeah.
So look at that.
The internet's such a crazy place, man. People just say things because they think there's no real human. None of these people would ever have the balls or even really I don't even think they're that actually mean. Like if they saw you in person, there's no shot that they would say these things to you. I got death threats for throwing candy at kids like a pinata's never fucking existed before. And anytime I actually contacted these people because they would post it under the video. But I would reach out and say, hey, listen, I'm a person.
I'm a real person here. Yeah.
And what's the deal? They would go, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. Like their first reaction 99% of the time was, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. And I was like, it's okay. Just know that, like, there are people behind the things that you're saying that are going to read the things that you're saying because it's my 15 minutes of fame and I am incredibly into myself. So I'm going to read what you say.
Yeah. I'm not so big that I don't do that. I'm so small that like I read everything that comes across. And it's funny too, because like with this show, like I'll find that some of the criticism is like, I don't know, are they negging me? I can't tell. It's like people who they seem they want to be
attention.
They kind of do, and they'll be like, and one person was like, oh my God, it's so cute the way I'm assuming this is what the voice sounds like. It's so cute the way you have that little lisp. And I'm like, what? Yeah, you have this little lisp. It's so adorable. I love it. I'm like, I'm like, what? I have a, and I'm like, no, I don't have one. And then I'm like, I don't have one. And then like I reach out to Cody Johnston from the show, Even More News. I'm like, dude, I've been on your show. Do I have a lisp? He's like, I don't think so. But more importantly, why the fuck are you listening to what people are saying about you online? Yeah. I was like, okay, that's a very, very good point. Very good point.
It was crazy, man. It did weird things to my brain because it made me realize like, oh man, we really as humans, we do not understand numbers. We do not understand percentages that you can read through 150 comments that are positive and one comment that's negative, and you leave that session of reading comments going, "Oh, I'm a piece of shit."
Absolutely, it's
crazy, dude. So many people, LOL, laughing, like people tagging their friends, and none of that makes any impact. You don't give a shit about any of that.
No, that's that one person.
Your beard was actually uneven, and I'm sitting there in the mirror for an hour and a half trying to figure it out.
Like, did you notice that one of your eyes is a little higher than the other?
Yeah, dude.
Well, like, now damn. I fucking do. Thank you so much.
Every day I look in the mirror.
All right, buddy. I am super excited. I know that you must be as well. We're going to talk to some experts in sleep. We're going to speak to some medical experts in sleep.
So many questions.
I know, I do too. And they come from different areas of medicine, which is kind of cool. We have Dr. Chris Winter and we have Dr. Seema Khosla. They're both going to speak to us about sleep, answer some questions that you and I have, some I got from listeners as well. I think this is going to be really exciting. So everyone, stay tuned. Remember, if you haven't already, please like, subscribe, and leave reviews for me on iTunes for the show. I appreciate that. Follow us at The House of Pod. Thank you to Nadine for help with production. And all right, stay tuned. Here we go.
Let's get in.
And we're back. Oh my goodness, Shaheen, this is exciting because you've always wanted to. You've told me ever since I've known you. You've said to me you want to talk to sleep doctors.
I have so many questions. Well, I have questions. I did a whole thing on sleep. It's like very important to me. It wasn't very important to me.
Yeah.
In my 20s. Well, it's never important to you in your 20s.
Now I'm giving to you as a gift because I love you. Two amazing sleep doctors. We have Dr. Seema Khosla, FCCP, FAASM, PIMP, GOD. We also have Dr. Chris Winter with all the same acronyms behind his name. What do those mean, guys? Let's start, Seema. First of all, thank you so much for coming. Tell us about these titles you have because they're exciting.
Are they exciting?
I think so.
I guess in our world. It is. So the FAASM is probably one that Chris and I have in common. And that is just a fellow of the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, which is our society. You know, sleep is a really, really small world. And so it just is sort of a measure that you have contributed in some way to your field.
And what about the other one? So Chris, you have a couple of different ones there. What are yours? What are your titles?
So I'm a neurologist. So I'm a diplomat of the American Board of Psychiatry and Neurology, which is sort of the board dates back to a period of time when they sort of certified both neurologists and psychiatrists. So I'm not a psychiatrist, even though the board historically has that name. And then I'm a diplomat of the American Board of Sleep Medicine, which is the old sleep medicine board. It's now defunct, even though if you have it, you're sort of recognized for life. Most newer doctors are certified through like the American Board of Psychiatry and Neurology sleep test, which I was certified for a period of time. And then I got into an argument with somebody on the phone because I thought the way they handled our recertification was laborious and expensive and ridiculous. And I said, you know what? I don't want it anymore.
Why does this not surprise me?
I have now dropped.
I love
that.
It. The guy's like, really, listen, man, this is unnecessary.
Right. So I used to be a double board certified sleep doctor, but now I'm back to being just a single board certified sleep doctor. No better than anybody else. Oh, I used to be somebody, but not.
You know what, though? That sleep board was tough. So I did internal medicine, pulmonary care, and sleep, like the old sleep board. Yep. And then the new sleep board. And that old sleep board was it was the hardest exam I've ever done.
So you were boarded in you did the ABSM.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you look so young. You know, that's fantastic. Yeah, it was really tough. They had a they had an oral part and then a written. It was awful. It was a really difficult.
Terrible. Board. I didn't do the oral, but I did the written. It was like two days in Chicago. It was terrible.
Yep, that's right. I spent the night before mine. I was in a bathtub.
This is already going off the rails.
You both nerding out.
This is a new record. Are we like off the rails in like 8 minutes? This is a new record. Good job.
Went up real quick.
You two are double board, triple board certified, and I read one Forbes article that told me that I have bad sleep habits. So we're basically same on this page.
Exactly. Wait, no tomato.
So hold on. One of the first things I wanted to bring up, I think you guys have already highlighted, which is you can get to sleep medicine through different routes. It sounds like you went through Palm Critical Care, Seema, and Chris, you went through neurology. Are there other ways of doing it? I mean, can you go pretty much any way? And is it just the test you need to take, or is there like a special year?
It's one of my favorite parts about our field is you can come at it. Like we're this, I mean, not big, but a little umbrella. And we like to include everybody. So if you're like otolaryngology, if you're internal medicine, you can go straight into a sleep fellowship. We have psychiatry. We have a cardiology group. We have an endocrine person I've been trying to convince to do with sleep boards.
Peds?
Is that because... Peds.
Oh my gosh. How could I forget peds? Of course. Yes.
They're easy to forget.
Is that because
stop.
Sleep kind of invades every part of health? Is that why you can kind of approach it from every different angle?
I don't know that I'd pick the word invade, sure. But I would say that it spills into, that any, so you pick an organ, like pick a body part and there's some sleep related thing with it.
Even the spleen.
Even the eyeballs. Okay.
All right.
Ooh, eyeballs.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. All right. We're going to get to some of this, but real quick, all pediatrician hate mail, please send to Dr. Christopher Winter. It was him who said that about peds. Let me start by asking you, let's start with you, Chris. Can I call you Chris, first of all?
Please.
Okay. What is sleep? Tell me, what is sleep? What is it?
How do we do it?
Why?
How do you do it?
We'll get to how. What is it? And then why? What is it? And then, no, you do the what. Seema will do the why.
Yeah, she's got the tougher question, I think. I mean, I think sleep is a neurological state, really, that we cycle through approximately once every 24 hours. It's a relatively quiet state. You know, it's a place where, different things. It's an active, things are happening in the brain. People always say, I wish I could turn my brain off. And your brain really isn't turned off when you sleep. So it's just sort of a different state that our body sort of cycles through. And the why or why we do it and the exact mechanism of it. We know it's super important. You die when you don't have it, but in terms of what it's actually doing and I don't know, but I bet Seema does.
Well, so it's funny because you've hit on something really important, I think. Obviously, I mean, no surprise, right? Sometimes we try to figure out why we do something by looking at what happens if we don't do it, right? And so we know if you selectively sleep deprive a rat of REM sleep, they get, even if they get the same total amount of sleep, they eventually get, in a couple of weeks, they get septic and they die. So there's something really fundamentally important about sleep. You know, we know that sleep is really important for memory. So if we look at, I think years ago we heard, I don't know if you were there too, Chris, probably, we heard Dr. Seisler talk about sleep. He was the expert witness in the Michael Jackson trial. And so he talked about how Michael Jackson had this terrible insomnia, right? And he just started getting really disoriented and he couldn't regulate his temperature. And he had this cardiologist that traveled with him who gave him propofol to sleep. And so Dr. Seisler equated the idea of using propofol for sleep as eating cellulose and food. So if you eat cellulose, you will feel full, but it has no nutritive value. Just the same as if you get sleep by propofol, you are not tired, but you miss all of that restorative nature of sleep. And so Michael Jackson became very paranoid. He couldn't regulate his temperature. He was freezing. His makeup artist had to bring him, a blanket and a heater. He couldn't remember the lyrics to songs he had written. And so they figured out that he actually died of sleep deprivation brought on by propofol.
But it was the propofol that put him into like cardiac arrest or something. Or like, actually, I don't know the story of what happened to him. I do know that it was propofol related.
Yeah, 60 nights of propofol infusion. And then he coded. And Dr. Conrad Murray went to jail for, you know, a couple years out of a 4-year sentence.
Wow.
And just like she said, you know, infection and sepsis, one of the big things you see with sleep deprivation is arrhythmia and sort of cardiac instability. And certainly that's probably what did him in.
So I guess my next question is, how much do we need? Is everyone a little different? Is there some bare minimum? How is that determined, how much we need, absolutely need?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's sort of like caloric intake. You know, you could throw out every, you know, the average American, you know, adult male needs 2,200 calories. I'm making that up, but you know, it really is a lot deeper than, what's that?
I wish.
I have no idea if that is even close to what it did. Please don't. I'm not here to give diet advice, but you know, it's sort of, but you know, if you're a swimmer or something, or you're a retired accountant, yeah, you know, who sits around watching Hot Bench all day, like it really changes how much you need. And I think sleep's sort of like that. So I think we run into trouble in general in medicine when we start applying an average to an individual. And that's where it comes. So, you know, I think it's, you know, if somebody says, well, then I feel like I need 3 hours of sleep, that's probably well below what you actually need. And being able to function on a certain amount of sleep and being in a healthy place with your sleep are really two different things. And you don't have to spend too much time walking around a hospital at night to figure that out. You run into a trauma surgeon. It's like, as long as I get 1 hour of sleep, I'm good to go. And I don't know if that's the case. And I certainly don't want you taking my organs out if you've gotten 1 hour of sleep, but you know, belief plays a role there. And certain people are better at sleep deprivation than others. But I mean, I think you can throw 8 as a pretty decent average for an adult, but just understand that, you know, if you kind of look at that bell curve distribution and looking at 7 and 9, that probably constitutes about 70% of adults in that 7 to 9 hour range, which means 30% of people might be outside of that, need a little, you know, require less or need more. And that's where the problems in clinics really come. You know, somebody's trying to get more sleep than they actually need or get by on less. And both of those are equally problematic, I think.
How do you figure out what your need for sleep is? What's the way that I figure it out? Because I probably get around 7 a night. And sometimes I feel that sleep guilt. I don't know if y'all have people with that where, like, you know, they're doing the counting like 9, 10, 11, 12.
Sleep math.
Yeah. And feel like, shit, I didn't get my 8 hours. And now it's even harder for me to fall asleep. So how do I figure out what the amount of time, sleep time that I need is?
Isn't that funny? Because you're right. We learned a lot about this with the 10,000 steps, right? Like, that's not magic for everyone. Just like Chris said, we all have a different, and even within our own person, that'll vary. Like if you're sick or if you've like sat around not doing anything all day, right? So I think the easiest way, at least for me, and Chris, I'd love to hear what you have to say about it, is do you wake up spontaneously? Do you feel rested? Right? Then you're probably getting enough sleep.
I wake up having to pee and then I can't go back to bed. Okay. Because I have anxiety like everybody else. So how do I?
You're so young and you're such a mess already. I can't believe it. Holy shit. When you're our age, you're going to be a fucking nightmare.
I've been working on it. I've been meditating. I've been on mountaintops. I've been doing all kinds of things. And it's helping a little bit. I've been stretching before bed. I feel like that helps. But the like 8 hour sleep thing.
What are you stretching to help with the urination? I'm just curious.
I'm not stretching to help. I stopped drinking the fizzy water. The fizzy water has got to go if you've taken pisses in the middle of the night.
Fizzy water?
Yeah, man, fizzy water.
What are you, 7? What does that mean? Fizzy water. Carbonated
beverages? Oh my gosh, I call
beverages?
It fizzy water too, so don't be too harsh.
Yeah, the LaCroix.
LaCroix.
Yeah. LaCroix. Crikey. Exactly.
It sounds like you're putting a lot of pressure on yourself to sleep, though.
Yeah, I read that Forbes article. I'm telling you, it's in my brain the whole time now.
Yeah, I mean, but it's like performance anxiety, right?
Yeah.
Like if you're trying to control something, it's like, it's kind of, I saw some of this on Twitter. Maybe Chris, did you put this out? I don't remember, but they said sleep was like a cat. So the more you try to get the cat to play with you, the more it ignores you. So if you just leave it alone, the cat will come. Like sleep
that
will
sounds
come.
Like that sounds like Jade Wu. It wasn't me, but that sounds like something that she would say.
I've come back on my Twitter, sorry, I can't tell you.
Very zen little things that you're like, yeah, it is like chasing a cat.
He did touch on meditation, though. Is that something you recommend for patients? What are your recommendations for patients who come in? And the sleep problems are not medical ones. We can talk. I want to talk about that, too. But like you've rolled out obstructive sleep apnea or a physical ailment or a bladder issue, whatever. What are your recommendations in that situation?
Well, I think Chris would probably agree. We try to tailor it, right? Like everybody is so different. So if you, you know, if you come in and I start talking about meditation and you look at me like I have three heads, well, that's not going to work for you, right? So we have to find something that you are receptive to, something that works within the confines. Like it, or else it turns into a chore, kind of like you're describing, right? Oh, I got to get my meditation in and I got to walk and I got to do this. And I, oh, what time do I stop my caffeine, right? It becomes like this full-time job. And we really want to take the pressure off. And so we kind of reverse engineer it. So your wind down routine isn't just, you know, wash your face and, you know, turn off the lights. You kind of reverse engineer it for when do you exercise? When do you have your last meal? When do you stop your caffeine? And gradually ease into it, right? Like you can't go 90 miles an hour to zero. That's unrealistic. You have to let your brain decompress. And what does that look like for you?
Chris, you were going to say something as well. Does that go along with your thoughts?
She's exactly right. I mean, I think that meditation carries with it weight. And it's not necessarily good weight. You know, it's sort of, I have no idea what the analogy is that when you say it, you know, it's like, oh, meditation, that's sort of touchy feely, that you've got some sort of om and mantra or whatever. But really, it's just about, to me, helping an individual understand that we think of sleep as very black and white, that if you're in bed awake, it's terrible and you're hurting yourself and you've got to get to sleep. I always think that the worst thing that we can do is kind of equate speed of unconsciousness with healthy sleep. It's like, I'm a great eater. Why are you a great eater? Because I can eat my dinner in 4 minutes or less most nights if I'm really concentrating. Like that seems kind of weird to me. Like, why would you think that makes you a nutritious person because you can eat your dinner fast? So speed with which you fall asleep is irrelevant to me. And so what can you control? You can control being in bed. You can control being relaxed. You can control, you know, mindfulness and all these things. I just did a podcast on what actually increases deep sleep. And there was a great German study that thinking about relaxing words increases deep sleep. Thinking about yourself as being in a submarine and going deeper into the ocean as you fall asleep increases deep sleep. Sarah Medic did a study with young people where they did progressive relaxation techniques before a nap and then others didn't. Increase deep sleep. So I don't know that any of these techniques are necessarily better or worse, but it's that idea of, are you moving towards your bed, either when you go to bed at night or finish going to the bathroom after the fizzy water at night, with optimism, enthusiasm, clarity, happiness, or is it dread and fear and all the things that Michael Jackson, I'm sure, was going through when he was thinking about trying to go to bed and not having great success, you know, in whatever metric he was using. So I think that ability to sort of control, like I can get in bed and close my eyes and relax. I can control that right now. I can do it for you if you want me to, but getting in bed and going to sleep right now, not necessarily in my control. So the sooner we can get people outside of this metric of trying to control that, the better.
Wow. Being a sleep doctor makes you so poetic and eloquent. Is this part of the training? You guys are right. Good. So let's take a step back then. I mean, that was all very useful stuff, but let's take a step back. When someone comes to you and they say, I'm having sleep problems, what are the first medical things that you feel like you need to rule out or figure out before you get to some of the stuff we just spoke about? What are the things you go through?
You know, I think we try to separate out, don't you think, Chris, is it a nighttime problem or sort of a daytime problem? Meaning, is it a problem falling asleep, staying asleep? Or is it trouble waking up, staying awake during the day, right? And then you kind of have to tease apart, is there a disorder? Is it schedule? Is it circadian rhythm mismatch? You know, I think one of the things that surprises a lot of people is when we talk about what normal sleep onset latency is, right? People say, you know, my husband puts his head on the pillow and he's out. Normal sleep onset latency is like 15 to 30 minutes. So if it takes you more than a half hour to fall asleep, that's one thing. But if you fall asleep in 20 minutes, that's normal. And that's okay. And rest is okay. You know, yeah. It doesn't have to be like Chris was saying, it's okay to like close your eyes and think and just sort of drift off. And that is a-okay. It's not a race.
But in terms of things like, say, prostate issues, or obstructive sleep apnea, are those things worked out before they even get to you guys? Or is that something you guys also have to sort of manage?
That's us, baby.
That's us. It's like what she said. It's sort of, you know, prostate issue. If somebody says, look, I pee once during the day, you know, 38 times during the night, might be sleep apnea. If somebody says I pee 38 times. Every 15 minutes I'm going to the bathroom. Maybe that's more prostate. So it's kind of like she was saying, there's the round table of sleep is large, and there's lots of, you know, knights that sit at it in terms of different disciplines. So, you know, maybe I'm not the best individual to manage your, you know, chronic pulmonary situation at night that's affecting your sleep, but mm-hmm. you know, sleep touches so many different things that the differentials are always very broad. So we want to, you know, really take a very thorough history and try to figure out what it is. Or like you're saying, it's more of a cognitive anxiety sort of situation where the bones of your sleep are actually pretty good. You're just not allowing yourself to sort of make it into that process.
And part of it, I think, is sort of addressing expectations. You know, like you had kind of talked about, well, shouldn't I be sleeping 8 hours a night? And I can't sleep 8 hours a night. I'm sleeping 7.5. Am I harming myself? Well, I don't know. Are you, you know, are you rested? Are you sleepy? Right? That you might just be at a 7.5 hour sleeper, and that is okay. You know, I myself am more of like a 9 hour sleeper. And, you know, I mean, do I ever get 9 hours? Not so much. I mean, I have 3 kids and 2 dogs and a job.
That actually leads me in my next question. Like, how harmful? I mean, we're talking about something it sounds pretty harmful, right? If you don't sleep for a couple of days, you're dead. And so how worried should people be if they're not getting their full rested 8 hours? Like, obviously, I mean, I'm not a parent, and because of the sleep thing, I like my sleep, and I've heard that kids don't allow you to do that. And
it's the only reason, just so you guys know, it's the only reason.
The only thing preventing me from having children. But how much should I worry about not getting my full 8 hours? Like, I know that after 24 hours, you're basically driving drunk. After 36 hours, it's like, it's pretty horrible, even though we force you doctors to work like 36 hour shifts and expect you to operate. But how worried should we be for not getting an 8 hour amount of sleep a night?
Or whatever. I think we have to get away from the fixation on the hours. I think we assess how we feel, right? Yeah. Do you also have really high blood pressure? Do you also have, you know, are you falling asleep behind the wheel? Right? Are you... There's a lot to unpack. But it's interesting how you kind of brought up
long-term harm.
Long-term.
Right? I'm talking about like Alzheimer's and all sorts of other diseases that seem to be, at least your chances are increased from a lack of sleep. I think there is, I'm not a medical professional, but I think there is a connection between a lack of sleep and developing dementia or Alzheimer's and stuff like that. How worried do we need to be over a long period of time for not getting our 8 hours?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Worry about it. I mean, to me, it's, you know, how worried can you be as you're, you know, stuffing yourself with heavily salted lime tortilla chips, but I'm really worried about my sleep. Well, the salt on those tortilla chips is not great for your heart. So to me, it's, I think of everything as a spectrum.
Yeah.
So in the infrared over here, we have the people who are super worried about their sleep to the point where if they're not in bed and asleep in 5 minutes, they're already going to the Alzheimer's research, you know?
Right.
So, and that's the person who should never read Matt Walker's book, because if you're already in this red zone at that point, it's going to push you into like the part of the visible spectrum you can't see. The ultraviolet spectrum over here are the people who are like, yeah, as long as I get an hour of sleep, I'm good to go. Yeah. No, you're not. Like, you're harming yourself, and you've got opportunities to get more sleep, but you're choosing to watch more episodes of Succession, which I kind of get.
I understand.
But at the same time, it will be there tomorrow for you too. So I'm trying to like reel the red people into this, you know, green spectrum and pull the purple people into the spectrum where you're aware of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like exercise. Like I'm going to try to exercise every day. I'm going to run my dogs. Like Seema's got her dogs and I'm going to go to the gym and do some stuff. But if it doesn't work out that I can't exercise, I'm not beside myself. I'm like, oh, well, they got away from me or my back's kind of sore. Or I'm an old man, whatever. I'll work out tomorrow. But it's on my mind. So it's all about caring the appropriate amount. So worry, I don't think that that's something we should worry about. I mean, you're walking around a city, you're breathing carcinogens. Should you worry about that? What about the plastic that's building up? There's lots of things to worry
Chris,
about.
Chris, we're so worried about all of it. We can we can multitask. Listen, we're Persian.
Have a son that goes to the Naval Academy. So over Thanksgiving, when you're like happy everybody's around, he's like, conflict with China is probably inevitable. And you're like, oh, pass the potatoes. This is a great topic to talk about. You know, so yeah, there's lots of things to worry about. Just control what you can. Okay. Got but a great comfortable bed. You prioritize sleep. And you know, if things get out of your control, whatever, do better tomorrow night. But so it's
buy
kind
a new
of,
bed. Got it.
Yeah. Buy a new
bed. Every night is a chance to get it right.
Sponsored by.
Like yes. Oh, great quote. You write that down. It should be on a t-shirt.
There you go. But every night is another chance to get it right.
Hmm.
You know, and I think there's two components though to address. So one is sort of that subjective, or even my fitness tracker says I'm up all night, mm-hmm. right? The sort of what we would call paradoxical insomnia, where you, by EEG criteria, you're actually asleep, but you may be getting little snippets of sleep, and you're probably getting a little bit more sleep than you think you are. So that's one thing, and that can be caused by sleep apnea. And then there's a sort of over, you know, worrying about sleep, right? Like it's totally normal to wake up at night. It's just not normal to like drive yourself nuts about it. And so our pressure to sleep is driven by our circadian rhythm, right? So when we're biologically programmed to fall asleep and to wake up, but also what's called sleep pressure. So sleep pressure builds up from the minute you wake up until you go to sleep, right? So they both peak to push you to sleep. So at 4 in the morning, right? They're both down. And so, and I do this too sometimes when I wake up and I can't sleep, I'm like, it's just your sleep pressure. Like, just chill.
It sounds like you both have to deal with a lot of sleep-related anxiety. Mm-hmm. I mean, anxiety causing a sleep problem, but also you're dealing with the anxiety created by not sleeping, and that doesn't help. It's sort of, I'm sure, a vicious cycle that you guys have to help try and break. To that end, talking about medications, what point do you feel you need to get medications involved in the process, and how long can patients be on them without it becoming addictive, or how do you manage that this pathway with medications?
I'll bet, and I don't want to answer for Seema, but generally speaking, we're probably on the opposite end of that. The people who come to see us or to come to see me, they've been on the medications. They've been hammered with medications, and now either the primary care doctor's concerned because they're not working, or they're not working based upon the patient's, you know, perception of things, or there is a concern about them now. So we, generally speaking, I'm not putting people on medications. Number one, I don't believe in them. I mean, the idea that you need an antidepressant to sleep is not really true. It doesn't mean I don't believe in antidepressants or medications. You know, I put people on drugs for restless leg or narcolepsy all the time. But the idea that, and Seema brought up a really important point, is that the perception of the situation is often very different from the reality. And so imagine me going to my doctor saying, I'm putting on a little tummy situation here, and I really am eating some strange things. So I need prenatal vitamins because I'm clearly pregnant. Mm-hmm. Or I've got this headache and I think it's a parasite. So can you give me an antiparasitic? Like nobody would ever entertain either one of those thoughts. But Chris, you're male, so you're not pregnant and you don't have a parasite in your brain. Where in the world would you think that? There's many more likely causes of your headache than a parasite. But with insomnia, it's a weird rule change where you go to see your doctor and say, I haven't slept in 6 days, which is approaching the world record there and very difficult to do, especially looking as good as you do in your doctor's office. You're very likely to get a sleeping pill. So usually we're on the other side of that, of the pills don't work. I'm tired of being on them. How can you help me? So we're doing all the things to get people off and sleeping effectively without some sort of sleep aid. Now, if you're saying medications in general, there's a lot of disorders of sleep that require medication. You know, we talk about sleep apnea and use the CPAP, but there's other things that do require thoughtful medication use, and that's one thing. But in terms of sedatives and propofol, like we talked about, there's not a lot of that going on in our clinic, I don't think.
So that's interesting, because I guess it's sort of a little bit different because I practice in Fargo. And so we do a lot of telemedicine, and we've done telemedicine for like since 2008. So we've kind of, and there was some study, I forget who did it, but they showed that by the time somebody gets to a sleep person, they want the drugs. And so it's interesting, right? And so then you kind of have to balance that immediacy where the people just, this is what they want, but also sort of plant the seed of, okay, when we start a hypnotic, we have to have an exit strategy, and how can we better prepare you for that? Right. So it's like, you walk out the front door and you trip over the step and you hurt your knee, right? Like, yeah, you need a Band-Aid, but at some point you need to fix a step. And so we need to do both. And so we kind of implement these steps, right, for like cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia and addressing some of these, sleep misconceptions, while also maybe, here's a medication, but we're going to try it short term. But in the meantime, we're going to do a sleep study, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do that. We're going to try to figure this out.
And so in terms of looking at things objectively, like trying to, because you're saying it's really hard to objectively measure someone's sleep. And how do you do that? Is it through REM? Can you talk to us about like the stages of sleep and tell us a little bit about their importance?
Yeah, and measuring is getting easier. I mean, the consumer technology that measures sleep, what you wear on your wrist, this little device measures my sleep. There's a pad under my mattress. My bed actually tracks sleep. Aura rings, all kinds. So there's, that information is becoming more available to a consumer, which is kind of fun, in the sense that I have patients who come all the time and say, I don't sleep, but my tracker says I'm sleeping 6 hours a night. So I'm not sure what's really going on there. So they have access to some degree of data. We can do sleep studies. And like you said, the sleep study does a great job of determining what stage of sleep somebody's in. There's light sleep, which we spend about half our night in. And then the other half is sort of split between dreaming and deep sleep and to some configuration of the other. So, we have access to that information. In the past, it was always the one sleep study that your insurance paid for on that Tuesday night that you had. But I think that, just in my own career, and it sounds like Seema and I have been doing this about the same amount of time, it's just amazing the leap forward that, patients are coming with just scores of data on their own sleep. They don't know what it means, but here it all is. And can you help me sort through it to find the answer I'm looking for? So I'm really excited about that individuals have this ability to not get the best quality information about a night, but they've got this longitudinal data that we could never create through 30 sleep studies in a row. That would be cost prohibitive and no insurance would touch it. So I think more and more people are really interested in their sleep, and the athletes I work with are absolutely looking to that for performance advantages. And you asked earlier, how do I know how much sleep I need? One way is to put the Aura ring on or whatever Fitbit, Garmin, Withings device, wear it for a month, and then ask it, how much sleep am I averaging per 24 hours? And that might help you get a little bit closer to where you need to be.
And what about the stages of REM for our listeners that might really want to deep dive into it? Is there really an importance to knowing it other than like knowing that there are deeper levels of sleep? Is it important to you guys? How do you use that information? How do you use those levels of sleep to help you know what's going on with the patient or to help them?
So it's really interesting. I think if you're talking about consumer sleep technology, that we've seen where they used to try to be a little bit more granular about this is stage three, which is delta sleep. That's that slow wave sleep. It's like where kids grow and you get that really solid sleep. It's where we download our short-term memory into long-term memory. REM is, surprisingly active, but it's where we have those wonderful watching a movie kind of dreams. And I think somewhere along the way, they kind of figured out that if they're trying to be really, really specific about what sleep stage people are in, it's not always right. And you kind of create this anxiety. And so people sometimes get bad anxiety from their tracker. And there's a term for it. Kelly Barron came up with it. It's called orthosomnia, where you're so obsessed. You've got to get your 10,000 steps and you've got to get your perfect score on your Fitbit or what have you. And so what we've seen in some of the later iterations is now they're not necessarily saying what the stages they think are. Because remember, when we do sleep stages, that's an EEG measurement. And so it's hard to figure out what that is based on your wrist, right? But they're kind of telling us, well, are you awake or asleep? Is that more important to know? Right. And I think sometimes the way it portrays the information is it says you got 2.5 hours of deep sleep, and people come in, they say, I only got 2.5 hours of deep sleep. And I'm like, OK, but that's OK, because that's kind of normal. You know, it depends on how much you've slept. Right. But I think, you know, we try to overcomplicate things, I think. And I love looking at some of the data that comes out of these devices. Like Chris said, it's a great way for us to have longitudinal data. But I think what I love the most is that people are talking about their sleep. And they're actually, you know, now they're on Instagram, they're evangelizing about sleep and look at my lavender, whatever, and my eye mask, and I'm not going out tonight. I'm going to sleep. And I love that.
I'll tell you, like, I'm a college professor, and in my classroom, I tell my students that bragging about not sleeping is not interesting. It's not a cool thing to do. And, oh, I pulled an all-nighter. And it's like, that is not the way to get ahead in university. And
no.
It's funny because, like, the medical, I mean, excuse me for calling y'all out, but, like, the medical, like, I don't know, any resident that I've ever talked to, watching my brother go through the residency program when he was a doctor and I was living with him, it's like, y'all would go and work for 40 hours in a row treating patients and torturing each other. And it seems like
I fell asleep at a stop sign on my way home as an intern. It was my first night on call, and somebody had to peep their horn at me. And my immediate thought was, I am such a good little intern. Like, I fell asleep at a stop sign, literally. Yeah. I was an intern. It probably wasn't until I was a fellow. Yeah. So 3 years later that I realized how dangerous that is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right. But it's that bravado, right? It's that sort of culture of medicine that I feel like maybe they're breaking it now, but we're far from where we need to be.
Yeah. It's better for sure. And people, as you might predict, are, you know, upset about that and will complain about it being easier or whatever, but it's not.
How dare you make it easier for people who came after you?
That's the general problem. But I do hope with humans, but I do think it is on its way to getting better. And, you know, med students are doing less overnights generally. Those sorts of things. And you're exactly right, though. You know, as medical students and residents, particularly back when we were training, and there wasn't the, you know, I was like there the first year they made the 80-hour work rule where you couldn't work more than 80 hours.
That was my chief year. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That was my first fellow year.
It was wild.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we all kind of saw what that was like, you know, and I think we all want to fool ourselves as doctors at some point to say, oh, I know how to get by without sleep. I'm a doctor. But I mean, you can't really train yourself, can you? I mean, I'm assuming Navy SEALs do some crazy stuff to train themselves, but I'm sure it's all short-term gains, right? You can't cheat your body to use less sleep, can you?
You know, one of the coolest things I think about sleep is, you know, sleep and memory. And part of this talk that Dr. Seisler gave us was he kind of talked about what happens sort of on a cellular level with mice. And he asked us to imagine that our brain is like a big city, like New York City, right? These big, huge, tall buildings, and all day long, they're tossing debris out into the alleys. And then the garbage truck is coming and taking all the debris away, right? And what happens with our sleep is the buildings shrink and the alleys get really wide. And so it's much easier to remove all that debris. And when you look at that debris, a lot of it is beta amyloid, which is what builds up in Alzheimer's.
Mm.
So yeah, we might have gotten away with it in our 20s. I mean, we did a lot of stupid things in our 20s, right? I don't want to do it again. I don't want to go back to those, you know, Q3 calls in the ICU.
We were Q2. Oh. God, do you remember those?
Do you know what that means? I do remember those,
but yeah.
I just assume that there were two people named Q beating him with something.
That's right. He was Q2. Every hospital has a Q or a couple Qs.
Do they have any QTs?
No, no cuties.
Just the interval.
That's the interval. Then the really long ones in the CCU. Yeah.
So it means every other night. So like Q3 means every third night, for example. So,
okay. You spent in the hospital?
Yeah. Or you're on call, or you did a long shift or something along those lines. Okay. Let me shift gears a little bit here. Let's talk about alcohol. Alcohol has become, from my perspective as a hepatologist, I've seen a lot more alcohol-related injury over the last couple of years. It's been climbing before that, but in the last couple of years of COVID, it's become a little bit more dramatic than what I've seen. I'm assuming, I know a little bit about this, but it's been a long time since I've looked at the sleep literature. How does alcohol affect the sleep cycles? Because I know a lot of people will drink and they'll feel like they're going to get more sleep because of it. They'll sleep longer or something, but it doesn't actually improve your sleep, does it?
No, especially in a chronic situation, which most people who are drinking regularly. I mean, I'm sure there's people who, if they'll drink at the holidays or something. And so there is some evidence that says, acutely, alcohol, in a small amount might actually enhance deep sleep, at least in the first half of the night. The problem is when the alcohol is metabolized, it does a lot of negative things to your sleep on the back end. So, and then when you start, sort of adding the drinks and creating more of a chronic alcohol ingestion picture, everything kind of goes to pieces. So the problem with alcohol, as with a lot of sleep aids, is if you're measuring sleep based upon speed of unconsciousness, sure. Yeah. I mean, bourbon might be the best sleep aid ever. Just drink enough of it and suddenly you're unconscious, which is what everybody wants. I want to get in bed and become unconscious as quickly as possible. And I don't want to wake up to go to the bathroom, as we've already talked about, even though alcohol is a diuretic. So I think that when we have these sort of distorted visions of, Frank's a good sleeper because every time he sits down, he goes right to sleep. Doesn't matter what situation he's in. Man, he's a great sleeper because he can sleep anywhere. Versus Jennifer, it takes her sometimes 20, even 30 minutes to fall asleep. Oh, what are we going to do for her because she's killing herself? I actually think Jennifer is a much healthier situation there than the other guy. So until we can get out from under, what can we do to get sleep faster and not be awake at all in bed? I think alcohol will continue to be, and I think it is still, the number one sleep aid in this country, which is problematic.
And then it makes your sleep apnea worse too.
Mm-hmm. Big time. Mm-hmm. So bad. But you're not aware of it, which is really nice. As you're suffocating to death, you're blissfully somewhere else, in your mind.
It's not just alcohol though, right? People smoke weed to help them sleep as well. Is that any different? Like, are the other, drugs that you can use? Is that
great question?
So it's interesting. I live in Minnesota. I work in Fargo, North Dakota. And Minnesota is the only state where you can do medical marijuana for obstructive sleep apnea.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's based on that dronabinol study. So they did a study on, there's a medication called dronabinol or Marinol, which is what used to give kids to pre-medicate before chemo. And what they found is that it did help with the sleep apnea. It did help people feel better, but it's not like a gigantic amount. And so I have no idea how it got passed. I saw it on the news and I was like, hang on, what now?
So it's somehow acting centrally for central sleep apnea, not obstructive.
Mm-hmm. And there are clinical trials now, not on pod, but there are medications that are undergoing trials now that open up your airway to treat obstructive sleep apnea. So in 3 to 5 years, maybe we will be writing a prescription to treat obstructive sleep apnea.
What's the proposed mechanism behind that?
So one medication, it's oxybutynin and like Strattera basically. And so the idea is that it opens up your airway by hitting two different areas. And so they've done trials and they found that using just the one made your sleep too fragmented and it wasn't enough and people didn't feel better. But by using this combination, it actually reduces how many times they hold their breath per hour and they feel better. And so this is a really interesting trial. So maybe in the next 3 to 5 years, we will be writing a prescription to help treat obstructive sleep apnea. So it's interesting. We'll have to see where the trial goes.
Chris, you were going to
say something. I was going to say, I think that in general, the majority of people who are tending to use marijuana, we see a lot in the sports that we deal with, are just using it to wind down, fall asleep quicker. It's again, just sort of a sedative. And it's interesting looking at Major League Baseball. They've gone from being a banned substance, you're allowed to use it, to sort of permissive, to now, I think this year, there is actually a preferred CBD cannabis distributor, and they've got a sponsorship with Major League Baseball. It's fascinating how far it's come. But I don't think chronic use really does a lot of positive things for sleep outside of you know, for individuals, we've talked a lot about anxiety kind of relaxes mm-hmm. them and kind of puts them in a place where they're maybe a little bit better of a mindset to, you know, we do a very good job of getting people amped up in life. You know, let's get fired up before the volleyball game as soon as kids are coming back. We ripped them to shreds. We killed them. They were so terrible. We blew them away. But we don't do a good job of helping kids like that settle. Okay, now mm-hmm. you've beaten the crap out of this, you know, other North Dakota volleyball team that's terrible and we won and that's important. And now we've got to relax and get settled down because we have to do a little bit of homework and go to bed. We don't do a good job of that. And
that's
so people find themselves in pitching for the Los Angeles Dodgers and having no idea what to do with that energy after the big game because it's mm-hmm. not something that we really teach people. So I can see why people would want a shortcut like, you know, CBD or marijuana to kind of help them settle very quickly because that's not a skill they really possess.
That's funny. That's what Michael Jackson would talk about. He'd be so amped up after a show that he would take, he wouldn't sleep for a couple of days. So yeah. That's really interesting. Yeah. And just to be clear, the dronabinol stuff is, the medication that I was talking about isn't dronabinol to keep your airway open. Mm-hmm. That's like a separate mm-hmm. thing.
Yeah. But it's a marijuana based compound.
Nope. It's oxybutynin and Strattera.
Okay. So, yeah, but
the dronabinol is separate. So that was based on different studies that showed that you did get an improvement in how many times you hold your breath per hour and people slept better. So that's sort of a separate medication in Minnesota you can use. and that's how it got translated to medical marijuana. It's not the same thing, but I think we're all very interested.
That's a good Twitter poll. What marijuana or a CPAP device?
Well, but it's, and that's it.
Like,
right?
I like that.
And so but it's interesting because we know like there was some basic science researcher that showed that cannabis will suppress REM sleep, which for us in the sleep world is important when we're dealing with narcolepsy, like kids who are really, really sleepy during the day. One of the tests that we do is we do that overnight sleep study to make sure they don't have sleep apnea or anything like that. But then we ask them to stay the next day and do a series of naps. And what we're looking for is that if they go from being awake to hitting REM on a couple of those naps, because we know it usually takes, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours to go from being awake to hitting REM. So if they hit REM really early on those naps, for us, that fits with narcolepsy. But now you introduce a substance that might be suppressing REM.
Yeah.
And then when they're off of the substance, they get REM rebound. So it can really impact things.
So Seema, if a kid comes to you and is like, hey, I heard on the Joe Rogan podcast, which I listen to all the time because I like to open my mind and I'm intellectual, and they said that marijuana helps you sleep. Should I try it? What do you say to them?
You know, this comes up a lot for us. I'm actually really interested in seeing what happens if they actually study it, because I want to know, how do I dose it? What are the side effects? What do we do long-term? What about short-term? I'm very interested by it. Anything that helps our patients sleep, I think, is helpful. Now, is a trade-off, just like we talked about with alcohol, I'm not sure that trade-off helps, right? Yeah, you might fall asleep, or like Chris says, like your race to falling asleep, you might win, but it's not great sleep and your sleep apnea is worse. So we always have a conversation about it though.
Where do you usually end up on that conversation? Is it usually like, let's try and find a way to get to sleep without mm-hmm. the marijuana, or
mm-hmm. I do have a few little ladies though that make marijuana cookies with the butter.
Oh man.
All right, one last question for you guys. Maybe this is the one, maybe you've already answered it with this last question, but what would you say are the biggest controversies right now in the sleep world? What's the biggest controversy? And if there isn't one, that's reasonable too.
Let's start one.
I think
pillows are unnecessary.
You know, let's start one.
Is this how QAnon started?
Yes.
This is exactly.
Pillows are a big lie. Okay, they're just a big lie. You don't actually need a pillow. Just Target wanted to sell some more things. No.
So who knew pillows would become so political, right?
Yeah, exactly. No kidding.
Jesus. All right, I'll take that as there's no massive controversies. Everything seems pretty cool in the world of sleep. All right. You guys have been super duper helpful and you guys are awesome. Let me make sure we plug things very hard. I want to plug intensely here. Seema, where can people find you? Please tell us where.
Spoken like a true GI doctor.
And I how. I mostly want to unplug.
And mainly unplug.
That's mostly what I'm trying to do. Where can people find you? How can they find you? Why? Why find you? Tell us.
Okay, so I am going to do the opposite. Don't find me, but please listen to our ASM podcast. It's called Talking Sleep, and it's from the American Academy of Sleep Medicine. I am just a solo practitioner in Fargo with my very small practice, so you definitely don't need to find me.
It's smart. You're wicked smart. What am I being invited on this podcast? I want to talk about you. I want to go on your sleep podcast. This sounds fun. What do people?
I think you should. I think you should tell us how sleep intersects with GI. I think it's really fascinating.
Okay. I'm in. All right, Chris. Okay. Where can people find you? Where can people learn more about all that is Chris?
Yeah. So if you're not interested in great information about sleep, and Seema's podcast is really outstanding. It's called Talking Sleep, and you should listen to it. She's done a lot of episodes. She's a really good host. She picks really interesting topics. She makes it such that if you don't really understand a lot about sleep, it's meaningful to you. If you're a super sleep nerd, it's super meaningful to you as well too. So I really should, you should find her on there.
Chris was actually our first guest. So go listen to that one.
There you go.
That's right. And they've improved so much. It's been gotten so much better. Like that was, mainly an audio check. That's what it was.
That's good.
Tell me what you had for breakfast kind of thing. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Dr. Chris Winter. That's a lot of fun. I love interacting with people on there. I've got a podcast. It's called Sleep Unplugged. It's a little bit more off the rails than that, but we try to make an effort to do something fun and entertaining and educational once a week. And I actually really enjoyed it. It's been a lot of fun. My daughter produces it. And so that's fun. The audio quality is about that of a Mayday distress signal, but outside
ridiculous.
Of that, maybe I need a better microphone or something.
No, it sounds pretty good.
What a silly concept, trying to make like medical stuff entertaining and fun. Oh dude, you're going nowhere with it. What a ridiculous idea. Fahim the Dream, where and why and who?
I specifically don't want anyone to find me for any reason. I've just gotten off of socials, and part of it is because they were hurting my sleep. Okay. I was doom scrolling and not sleeping. And so I am done with the socials. Trying to get my 8 hours. Yeah. That's one of the reasons that I directed a whole show about it. It's something that's super important to me. Yeah, you doom scroll all night long. Nothing's important to you after a while. That's it. That's all I got. I don't want anyone to find me.
What do you teach?
I teach communication studies. I coach a speech and debate team. We just won a national championship on Sunday.
Congratulations.
Ooh, big time.
It's our 13th one, so it was awesome.
Oh, jeez. Wow.
You're a dynasty.
Yes, indeed. Yes, we are now the winningest team in the country, which is awesome. And a couple years ago, I did an entire 25-minute show about sleep, and it freaked my shit out. It was very successful, the show, but it definitely freaked me out. Matthew Walker's book absolutely scared the piss out of me, and gave me some sleep anxiety, as you have rightly implied. But it also taught me all kinds of things that I now teach my students every single semester. You know, get rid of your phone. Your pillow's probably gross. Use an eye mask, stuff like that.
Good sleep hygiene.
Wash your pillowcase. Yep.
Good sleep hygiene. People don't think about it like hygiene, but that's probably the way that they should, I guess.
That's awesome. You talk to college students about that. It's great.
Every day. You got it.
He's a beautiful young man. We're very proud of him. We're very, very proud of him. Thank you guys so much for coming on. We're definitely going to check out these podcasts. I'm very excited to hear more from you guys. Thank you both so much. And we'll talk again soon.
Bye, friends. You were awesome.
Thanks, guys.
See you, Seema. Good talking to you.
This podcast is not a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Please consult a physician or other qualified healthcare provider for your specific healthcare needs or concerns. The opinions expressed on this podcast do not represent the opinions of our employees. Details in the podcast have been changed so that patient identification is not possible. And I'm alive and I want to stay.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.